Every Sunday, we're going to start the exact same thing. That the first class is going to be one thing that we can take out of the parasha that I can apply for the rest of the week. We did that last Sunday, and instead of learning about the parasha on Thursday, on Friday, then we learn something on Sunday, and then you take something from the parasha, because every parasha has a connection to the week, and anything that we learn in the parasha is bashgacha pratit for the week. So if I learn something in the parasha, all the messages in it, they have to apply it for the rest of the week. So, I mean, it's nice to hear the stories and the interesting things from the parasha, but the point is that I want to take something with me for the rest of the week that I can work on myself and refine myself, and something that is applying for that week. So Sunday we're always starting with this topic, something from the parasha. Another series we're going to start doing is dealing with life challenges. And every time we'll do a different topic, which probably the dominating ones will be chinuch of
second
kids.
Class?
Yeah, second class. Okay. Today we'll do shalom bayit, because that's a lot of the topics that I choose, by the way, because we have a very small group here, but we have about 5,000 people online. So I get requests, do this class, do that class. That's why we're still not 100% with the schedule and with the curriculum, but probably in a couple more times we'll get it set, and then we'll have a very mesuda, very organized order. But a lot of the topics that I talk about is because I get a lot of emails with requests. So one of the highest ones is to talk about shalom bayit, anything that has to do with shalom bayit and chinuch of the kids. So we will do a series of dealing with life challenges. The majority will talk about shalom bayit, we'll talk about chinuch, we'll talk about depression, we'll talk about many different things, but it has to do with how do I deal with life challenges, because to learn Torah is beautiful, but I can take the beautiful wisdom of the Torah, and if I don't apply it to my life, then there's kind of missing the point. Our sages say, "Amaseh v'ikar," the action is the main part. So to sit and learn is beautiful, but if I don't know how to manifest it into my life, then the point of the learning is missed. So Bezrat Hashem, we'll do that. Today we're also going to start with Birkat HaNe'anim. We'll do a few classes of introduction, and then we'll start going into actual halakha. And Bezrat Hashem, that should be also very interesting, because I see that many, many people, they do not know half of the brachot, what to say, when to say, how to say, on which food you say what bracha, and many other things. That it's a great shame, because last week we started talking about the topic of reincarnation, which every Tuesday we're going to start Shara Gilgulim, the gates of reincarnation of the Arizal, and we'll talk from many other books of reincarnation. And the Arizal explains that a big part of our tikkun is the brachot, is Birkat HaNe'anim, that I say a bracha on something, whether it's food, whether it's drink, whatever it is, that part of our tikkun is through these brachot. So it's an extremely important topic, and these things are more shayach to women, because a lot of women says, I don't have a lot of mitzvot technically to do, so at least give me something that I can really concentrate on. So our brachot, our blessings, are extremely important, and that's, we're going to go through it today too. So this week's parsha is called Vayishlach, and it's one of the most favorite parshas one of my favorite parshiot, and I'll tell you a very short story. Some of you might know it already, but this week, Be'ezrat Hashem, my wife and me are celebrating our 13th anniversary. Now, when we got married, we had a very difficult engagement, because there was a lot of pressure from the families. We were new Baal Tshuvas, and there was a lot of pressure from the families not to get married, and there was a lot of problems, let's put it this way. And we had to delay our engagement. We got engaged. I met her. I don't know if all of you know my story, but 15 years ago I had a near-death experience. Bezrat Hashem, we'll start doing... Oh, that's another thing that you might be interesting or knowing, is everybody keeps telling me, okay, you told me the short version, the 5-hour short version, I want to hear the long version. So we're going to start doing once or twice a week that I'm going to go into more details about it. And one of the reasons why is because I'm working on a book for that story. And the way how I do it is I record myself and the editor writes it. So I need about another 30 hours of audio. So some will be lucky to hear it firsthand before the book. So that's one thing. So anyway, so in my near-death experience, I saw her. When they showed me my entire life forward, I saw my wife. I saw my kids. I saw many other things. Excuse me? You didn't hear the story?
No, but you saw your wife, future wife.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They showed me my entire life forward. I'm really zooming through. I don't want to stop about that. But one of the things that I saw forward, they showed me my wife and I saw my wedding. And I saw my kids. I saw my kids' braces. So anyway, so when I saw my wife my first time, I recognized her from the other side of the room. So half a year later, we kind of got shidduched. Then we went on a date, and right away I recognized. I was like, okay. And of course, I can't tell her, I saw you. Maybe you'll save me all the money on the shidduchim. We're getting married in a few months. So Baruch Hashem. That's also, there's a few offers. But the point is that after 2 weeks, I asked her to marry me. Baruch Hashem, there was a miracle and she agreed. And we got engaged on Tu B'Av, on 15th of Av, which is the how do you call it in English? Valentine's Day, the Jewish Valentine's Day. And we got engaged on Tu B'Av, and we wanted to get married on Chai Elul, which is a month and 3 days after. And of course, everybody went berserk. Long story short, we had to really delay the wedding for a very long time. And there was a lot of problems. It was a very difficult engagement with fighting and a lot of problems. Finally, we decided to get married, and we chose a very, very special date, the 14th day of Kislev, Yudalet Kislev, which is the Lubavitcher Rebbe's anniversary. And we got married in Brooklyn, and nobody could understand how these two new Baal Tshuvas are getting this date. We got the hall, we got the band, everything we got booked because we booked it so far in advance. So Bezrat Hashem, this week we're celebrating our anniversary. But why is it so special? Because Parashat Vayishlach usually falls around that date. And when I went up to the Torah, in 770 in Brooklyn. Now the custom is that the chatanim, the grooms, they go up to the Torah in the minyanim there. They get the first priority. Since it was Kislev, it was a very busy month. There were 24 grooms, 24 chatanim, and 8 aliyot. So how do you do that? They make a few minyanim, they make a few aliyot. But the main minyan, which you have about 2,000, 3,000 people that morning, then you want to get aliyah in the main minyan. And it's a lottery. Doesn't matter who you are, yichus, shmichus, doesn't matter who it is. They make a lottery and they pull out numbers. So, ashgacha pratit, from 24 grooms, I get called in the main minyan to go up to the Torah. And you only know it the day of the morning. I mean, nobody knows. I mean, all the families, they come with the bags of, you know, of treats to throw. They don't know if you go up to the Torah or not. You go up in the morning and you look at the list. I was like, okay, I'm getting the fifth aliyah. So I go up to the Torah and we start reading. And in the fifth part of the parasha, you'll read it this week, Bezrat Hashem on Thursday, in the eighth pasuk, it says a very interesting pasuk. It says, "Vatamat Dvora, meyaneket Rivka, vatikaver mitachat ha'alon, v'ikare shmo alon b'chut." I go off from the bima, and everybody tells me, "Did you see? Your names are in the same pasuk." Now, my wife's name is Dvora. There's nowhere in the Tanakh the name Dvora, but about the story of Dvora the prophet, and in Parashat Vayishlach. My name is not, you know, there's nowhere to find in the Torah. Alon? There's nowhere in the Torah that you find Elon, because Avraham Avinu's best friend was Elonei Mamre. But there's only one place in the Torah, in the Tanakh, the word Alon. And that's in the same Pasuk. Everybody's like, wow, did you see? Ashgacha Pratit, amazing. Both your names are in the same pasuk in the aliyah that I get from all the aliyot. Okay, I get off and we get married and Baruch Hashem, everything is happy. A year later, Baruch Hashem, we have a baby. And she was born on Chaf Cheshvan. Chaf Cheshvan is the birthday of the Rebbe Rashab, which is the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe. So she was born on Parashat Chayei Sarah. I wanted to call her Sarah. So my wife was like, no, I don't want the name Sarah. She starts asking me, what's this name? What's the name? What's the Rebbe Rashab's wife's name? What's the Rebbe Rashab's mother's name? She said, her name is Rivka. She was like, let's call her Rivka. So we call our daughter Rivka. So we wanted to do a kiddush for the baby. So we waited for my father to come from Israel. We lived in America at the time. We lived in New York. We waited for my father to come. So he came a month later. And he came on the Shabbat of our anniversary. Yudalit Kislev fell on Shabbat. So we did the kiddush in the shul. And out of the blue, Hashgacha Pratit again. Nobody gets called stam in 770 to Aliyah. I get called up again. To the same parasha, to the same Aliyah, to the same thing. And again, it says, V'tama dvora, me'aneket rivka, v'tikaber mitachat ha'alon, v'kayash mo'alon b'chutz. I go off the bima again, and everybody says, did you see? Even your daughter's name in the pasuk. So all three of our names, I mean, Rivka is a pretty common name, but all three of our names are in the same pasuk. And Dvora was the meaneket of Rivka. And at the time, my wife Dvora was the meaneket, I don't even know how you say it in English, the woman who would breastfeed the baby. In the olden days, they had a nanny that would breastfeed the baby. Meaneket. So that's why Parashat Vayishlach is one of my favorite parashiyot, especially that it's talking about a very sensitive topic that we all have to deal with at some point in our life and we do not know how to deal with it, is how do I deal with somebody that is angry at me? So the reason why I saw the connection to tell you about my personal story is because everybody was angry at us. My wife's parents, everybody, the family, everybody was angry. So it's very hard in our life that sometimes I do something, whether I do it deliberately, sometimes I don't do it deliberately, sometimes it's not even intentionally, sometimes I don't do anything, but somebody is upset at me, is angry at me, and it's hard for me because I don't want to have somebody upset at me. I don't want somebody angry at me. I don't want walking in the street and somebody looking at me or going and saying Lashon Hara about me, which is not true. Who wants this headache? Especially that I didn't do anything. Now, if I have a real fight, that's one thing. But even if I have a real fight, the Torah is all about making peace. Darkei Darkei Noam v'kol Netivotei Shalom. The entire Torah is about making peace. The Torah is called Shalom. The most powerful word in the Torah is Shalom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also called Shalom. It's one of his names. And all the brachot that we say, all the prayers that we say, they all funnel to the same thing. It's peace. Shalom. We finish 18. Sim shalom tova uracha. The most famous prayer you'll ask any Jew, the most furthest away Jew from religion, you'll tell him, what's the most famous pasuk you know about in the Torah? They'll tell you, Yoseh shalom mimromav. Hu yaseh shalom aleinu. Ve'al kol Yisrael. Birkat kohanim ve'yasim lecha shalom. Everything is shalom. The Torah is promoting peace. The Torah does not want any arguments, fights, and hate, anger. Torah is the complete opposite. But sometimes, whether I want it or not, I am in a position that somebody's angry at me. And I don't want to. Because it just builds more and more anger and more fighting. Needless to say, when it becomes even uglier and all the Lashon Hara and the separation between the groups and so forth. And in this parasha, we see about a very big fight between Yaakov and Esav. Now, the whole parasha is concentrating right now about Yaakov going out of Haran, that he was there for 22 years. He was basically in Haran for 20 years, working for Leah for 7 years, working for Rachel for 7 years, and working for Lavan to get his flocks, his sheep, his oxes out for another 6 years, plus another 2 years of traveling. 22 years he doesn't see Lavan. He doesn't see Esav. And in this parasha we learn how Yaakov is coming towards Esav and he's scared. He's like, this is the moment. Now I'm going to have to face Esav. He wants to kill me. I mean, last 2 weeks ago we read how Yaakov, so to say, stole the blessings. And Esav said, okay, wait, I have patience. As soon as my father dies, I'm killing you too. I'm not going to kill you while my father is alive because I don't want to make him sad. But wait, I have patience. I'll kill you too. So now is the time to face the reality. Yaakov is very scared. First of all, after 20 years of suffering Laban, now he has to face another headache. How do I face now Esav? And Esav is upset at me. The story says that Yaakov sends angels, and especially he sent angels because he knew that if he will send people, they'll get killed. So he sends angels. And the angels come back and they tell him, bad news, he's coming towards you with an army of 400 armed men. He's going to kill you. So Yaakov is a very smart man and he says, okay, let me prepare for this rendezvous. So he prepares in three different ways. But this is the time where they're kind of going to close the deal. And Yaakov has to prepare to the final meeting with Esav. Now he knows Esav is very upset at him. Now this fight did not start 22 years before that. It started 64 years before that because the fight started in the womb. The Midrash explains that Yaakov and Esav were from the same shiliah, the umbilical cord. Usually twins, they have two systems. Two umbilical cords, two placentas. Esav and Yaakov were sharing the same one. So they're already in the stomach, were already fighting. That's why every time Rivka was going through next to a synagogue, then Yaakov wanted to go out. Every time she went next to a house of idol worship, then Esav wanted to go out. But the fight already started from when they were in the womb. And then when Esav goes first, Yaakov still grabbed his feet. Right away, they were fighting. The next time we see that Yaakov and Esav had a fight was 15 years later. They're both 15 years old. Avraham Avinu dies. Yaakov goes to the funeral. Esav didn't bother to go to the funeral of his grandfather. Yaakov comes back from the funeral all upset because his grandfather died. And Yaakov sees Esav. That's the whole story with the lentil. Esav didn't bother to go to the funeral and he comes back. It says that Esav was extremely angry that day. The Midrash says that day he did five sins and one of them he killed that day he killed Nimrod. So he came all hyped up. And Yaakov was mourning, so he made lentil soup. That's why up until today when people are sitting Shiva they eat lentils. But anyways, then he has the story with the soup that he, so to say, buys his bechorah. He buys from him the being the firstborn. So that's already the second fight that the Torah is talking about. Later on, we see another fight, 48 years later, that Yaakov steals, so to say, the blessings. And Esav goes berserk. So the fight, there was constantly a fight between both of them. But now it was the time to square the deal. And Esav was coming to kill Yaakov. He did not care about anything. He knew that once he sees Yaakov, that's it. He wants his head off.
What age were they?
They were 63.
63 when he stole the brachot?
63 is when Yaakov, so to say, stole the brachot. And then, now if you want to make the calculation, so Yaakov was probably 85. 85, 86. I mean, I don't know exactly, but we know that they were 63 when Yaakov stole the brachot.
Esav didn't want the bechorah. When you say he stole it?
No, he bought the bechorah. The brachot he stole from him. But the bechorah, he gave him the soup. He didn't steal the bechorah. He bought it from him.
Okay,
no, he bought it. He told him, here, I'll give you the soup, and he bought it from him. Esav didn't want the Bechorah from the plain reason because that day he killed Nimrod. And he knew Nimrod was the king of the world.
Yeah.
Nimrod was not some, schmo from the street.
Yeah.
He knew the whole army of Nimrod is going to come to kill him.
Yeah.
So he didn't care. He's like, I'm probably going to die today anyways. Let me die full. So he didn't care. So he sold him the Bechora. I don't know how you would say Bechora in English. I don't know if there's even a word for Bechora. But Bechor is the older brother. And Yaakov bought it from Esav. The blessings he, so to say, stole from him. But we know that at the time of the stealing, they were 63 years old. Since Yaakov went to Lavan, that whole thing took 22 years. So it seems that Yaakov was 85 years old when they met. But now it's time to close the Cheshbon. So it says that Yaakov did not know what to do, because the angels came back and told him, listen, you have some pretty angry guy there coming towards you with 400 men, and they're coming to kill you. So Yaakov prepares in three different ways. First of all, he's preparing for war. And how does he prepare for war? He splits the camp. He puts he splits both camps, the women, the children, and the animals. The second way how he prepares for the war is with prayer. He starts praying. And the third way he prepares for war, he starts preparing presents for Esav. And he didn't buy him like a box of chocolates. He gave him hundreds and hundreds of animals. And the quantities, the Torah goes into the quantities. How many donkeys, how many sheep, how many oxes, how many females, how many males. The Torah goes into detail about the present. This guy just goes to show you, when you want to appease somebody with a present, you don't just buy him a box of chocolate. You have to come with a serious present. So Yaakov is preparing for the meeting. And now he's like, okay, let's see what happens. Now it says that the second that they met, right away they hug each other and they kiss each other. Pitom! Everything changes. So first of all, the Midrash explains that when Esav, he didn't really kiss him, he bit him. The Torah says, Vayishakehu, that he gave him a kiss, but the Midrash says, don't read it with a kuf from kiss, neshika, read it with a kaf, it's neshicha. So Esav bit him in his neck. There was a miracle, and his neck became strong, like a piece of marble, like happened with Moshe Rabbeinu. And Esav's teeth got stuck in his neck, and Esav started crying because his teeth were in pain, and Yaakov started crying because he has Esav's teeth stuck in him. That's why it says that they started crying. But it's a very great big wonder how within 1 second everything changes. I mean, a minute before that he's coming to him with swords, and then they see each other and suddenly their hearts melt, and they hug, and they kiss, and they make peace. And not only that, Esav goes the whole way, please come to live with me. I have a big country. I'm a king of a country. You know, Esav was a king of a country. He was the king of Seir. Seir is Jordan. So Esav was a king of a country. He inherited a country. And the funny thing is that he called the country and the city on the two names, the topics that he had the fight for. A fight with Yaakov. Because he called the country Seir. Seir is something hairy. Why? Because Yaakov took the coat of Nimrod, who was hairy. So he called the country Seir. And Edom, which was the city, for the lentil soup that was red. So the city and the country was named after that, after Seir and Edom. But Esav tells him, listen, I'm a king, come and live with me, bring all your cattle. I mean, Yaakov was a millionaire, he was a billionaire. You know how much cattle he had, how much sheep and goats? Esav says, come and live with me and we'll be neighbors. And suddenly he goes, Meshugana. He goes suddenly, after 85 years, suddenly his best friend.
It's a temporary change.
Excuse me?
It's a temporary change.
Of course. Which that already is a very interesting and very deep message, which we'll get to that in a second, about the closeness of two brothers. That in essence, we're all connected. In essence, all the Jews are connected. We're all one. It says koma achat, one piece. So even though if I really hate somebody for whatever reason, and each and every one of us has someone that we don't really like, some people, it's much more than one, or people that I dislike, but in essence, in our essence, we're all connected. And in some situations, you can be extremely angry at somebody, but when you see them, all you need to do is sometimes just say, oh, remember when we went to that place, or remember we did this and that. Two friends, when they fight, they remember something they did together, and suddenly the anger stops, the hearts, you know, they soften up. Why? Because there's some type of a connection. So that's kind of what happened. Later on, we'll go more in the Kabbalistic term, what happened with Esav and Yaakov, why Esav suddenly relaxed. But they saw each other, and their heart melted. After all, they were brothers. At the end of the day, brothers can fight for 85 years, but they're still brothers.
But
he bit him. That's Esav. Esav doesn't matter. That's, you know, you. Yeah. So the question comes, what did Yaakov do? What did Yaakov do to make the anger of Esav diminish and stop completely? Because I want to know, how can I make somebody that's upset at me stop being upset at me? Because if I have somebody that's upset at me, first of all, if I'm sensitive, I feel the anger. I feel this hate and animosity. And some people, they're less sensitive to pick up on it, but they feel something. And they don't know why they're feeling this heaviness. Yeah, because somebody on the other side of the world is hating you and constantly in his mind thinking how much they hate you, and you get this energy. So I don't want ever to have anybody upset at me. I don't want that. I want everybody to be fine with me, which is almost impossible, and almost in everybody's life you can pinpoint on somebody that's upset at me. So I want to learn from Yaakov, what did he do to make Esav relax? Now, we talked about the connection between Esav and Yaakov. There's a story in the Gemara, and that is taught in Masechet Sotah, that when Yaakov died, they brought the coffin from Mitzrayim, from Egypt, and they're coming to Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and they want to bury Yaakov, and right in the entrance of Ma'arat HaMachpelah is standing the one, and not only, the Esav. And he's like, what are you doing? And they're like, okay, we want to bury our father, our grandfather. Esav says, no, you're not burying him here. It's my piece, my part. And they're telling him, no, it's Yaakov's part. And they start arguing. And Esav says, who says it's Yaakov's? I mean, the first couple is Adam and Chava. The second couple is Avram and Sarah. The third couple is Yitzchak and Rivka. Yaakov already buried Leah. There's left one place. Esav says, who says it's for Yaakov? It's mine. You're not burying him. So they say, okay, relax. We have a document. It says Yaakov's. So he says, okay, show me the document. They said, listen, everything, Yaakov relocated to Mitzrayim. All the files are in Mitzrayim. So they send Naftali to Mitzrayim to go and get the document. In the meantime, the son of Dan, his name was Hushim. He was blind. It says that he was deaf. He was a little bit off. He doesn't know who's this guy. All he sees is some guy stopping the funeral. He sees his grandfather in the coffin on the floor. He's like, who's this guy stopping the funeral now? He takes a stick, hits him on his head, and his head, Esav's head, gets disattached and rolls over, and the head stops right in the place of the burial of Yaakov. And it says that the head of Esav was buried next to Yaakov. The Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, says that the head of Esav represents the mochin, the holy part, that Esav did have something that came from holiness. Even though the body was complete evil, the Gashmiut was 100% evil, but something, even in this entire evil, there was still some Nitzot Eloki. That even in the worst thing in this world, there's still a godly spark in it. So you take the most evil person, the most worst situation that you can imagine, that looks 100% bad and evil, there is still a godly spark in it. That means if there's a Nitzot Eloki, there's a godly spark, it means that it has to be good. There's no such a thing as something bad that belongs to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So even the head of Esav had some type of a godly spark, something positive, so the head had to be buried with Yaakov. But the interpretation of that based on Kabbalah is that Yaakov and Esav had a very, very strong connection, that as much as Esav manifested into the world as a wicked person, but he still had something good in him. But nevertheless, we want to know how Yaakov was able to calm Esav down. So we have to understand what he did. First of all, there was two ways how he relaxed. First of all, what's called bederech hateva, based on nature, that Yaakov made a kli, he made a vessel. He prepared for war, he split camps, he prayed, he prepared the present. He had to do his part, which is called creating a vessel based on nature. We hear it in many different places. You want parnasa, make a kli. You want shalom bayit, make a kli. You want this, make a kli. Make a vessel. And other people says, okay, sounds very sophisticated, make a vessel. How do I make a vessel? What do you mean make a vessel? But in anything that somebody comes for a bracha, they tell, make a yon parnasa, you have to make a vessel. So say, what, you want me to make like a cup? What do you mean make a vessel? So of course, in each particular topic, the vessel is different, but a vessel is basically what's called a kliki bul, something that can hold a blessing. So I have to create something in nature that if I have to get some type of a bracha, it has to come through nature. It cannot come not through nature. There's no such a thing that something comes to the world with no nature. There's a story that some person once came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he had a very severe sickness. And he came and he says, I want a bracha. So the Rebbe tells him, go to this doctor. So he says, with all the respect, Rebbe, I know how to go to a doctor. I came to you for a bracha. So the Rebbe says, what do you care if the blessing comes through the doctor? So even blessings, everything has to come, what's called bederech hateva. It has to come through nature. So Yaakov had to create a vessel through nature that the next part of the miracle was that it was be'al hateva. It was a mess. It was a miracle. The fact that Esav changed his mind, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says in a midrash, it was a miracle. It was what's called Sayata Dishmaya. Kadosh Baruch Hu made a change. Which means that in anything in this world, I have to have both elements. I have to have the path of nature, Derech HaTeva, by me creating some type of a vessel. And then I have to wait for the miracle of the Kadosh Baruch Hu for it to happen. It cannot happen with me. I don't have any control. Which means only when I prepare myself, that's when I have to elevate myself to a level that the miracle has to be dressed in nature. Well, how did Yaakov really do it? Yaakov prepared bederech hateva. He did three things according to nature. And then he also was waiting for the miracle. But the Midrash explains that how did Yaakov really do it? That first of all and most important, he told Esav, I'm sorry, you're right. It was wrong for me to steal the blessings. He told him. He says, you're right. Yaakov himself, the whole time, Yaakov felt bad about stealing. He didn't want to. He actually listened to his mom. His mom says, don't worry, I'll take the blame. And she actually says, if you're going to be cursed, I'll take the curse on me. So Yaakov the whole time felt bad that he actually tricked for the blessings. So the first and most important thing is that Yaakov says, I apologize, I'm sorry, you're right. I shouldn't have taken it. Which is already showing on a very high level that Yaakov was able to say, I was wrong. And in most cases, most people cannot admit that they're wrong. And in most of the arguments that I have, not most, but it's hard to say exactly, but in some of the arguments that I have with somebody, I'm wrong. But I cannot come and lower my ego and say, you're right. And that's the problem with most arguments and fights. And Bezrat Hashem soon, when we're going to talk about Shlom Bayit, that's one of the problems, that nobody wants to admit that they are the problem. Because everybody says, no, she's wrong. I didn't do anything. I'm fine. He's wrong. And a lot of times couples come to me for Shlom Bayit issues, and the first thing that I do is I separate them, and let's hear what you have to say, let's hear what you have to say. And all I hear is that they're, everybody says how they're right, and the other one is the wrong one. No, I'm fine. I'm totally good. And she's doing this and this and that. So in almost any argument, I don't want to be the wrong one. I have an ego. I have my own ego. No, I'm the one who got hurt here. I'm the one who was that it was done wrong for. So Yaakov goes completely the opposite way, and he admits. He says, "I'm sorry. You're right. You are 100% right. I apologize. I shouldn't have stolen the blessings from you." And that's the first thing that Yaakov does. The second thing is, he comes with a very sophisticated diplomatic tactic. Yaakov comes and says, "Why are you upset? You're upset that I stole the brachot? Nothing worked. Nothing worked. Why are you upset?" It says, "Im lavan garti v'tarag mitzvot shamarti." I did everything, and did, what did I get? I didn't get nothing. My father gave me a blessing that I'm going to get mital ha-shamayim u'mishmanei ha-aretz. I didn't get nothing. I got shor v'chamor. The Torah goes to a length in telling how Yaakov is telling him what he has. I have a lot of donkeys, I have a lot of cows. Who cares what you have? What are you making now, an inventory list? I don't want to, it doesn't make any difference for me how many donkeys you have. The Torah goes in length to tell us what Yaakov had, because Yaakov said to Esav, "You have nothing to worry about. The bracha didn't work, because I don't have anything. I didn't get the oils, the shamnei aretz. I didn't get nothing. I got donkeys. I got sheep. You want it? Take it. Here." That's why he gave him a present with all these animals. So Yaakov comes and tells Esav, "Relax, nothing, nothing worked. I did not get anything. So either way you're looking at it, the bracha didn't work." So he makes Esav relax by manipulating, so to say, by talking to him in a very diplomatic way. He says, "Listen, there's nothing to be angry about, because nothing really worked. Probably you'll still get it." But really, Yaakov had like a tactic. So first of all, he had a very smart way of calming him down by saying, "You're all right." Then he tells him, "Nothing worked. I'm still the same Yaakov. I didn't get anything. I suffered now by the house of Laban. Okay, so I have a wife and kids, but somebody sent me a funny joke about Yaakov, that it says that each one of the forefathers, they made one of the prayers. So Avraham Avinu made Shacharit, Yitzchak made Mincha, and Yaakov made Arvit. And the beautiful hint that we see is that the second letter of each one of them hints on the prayer that they created. So Avraham Avinu, his second letter of his name is Bet, and Bet is for Boker. So he made Shacharit. Boker is morning. Yitzchak, his second letter, is Tzadik. Tzadik goes for Tzaharayim, afternoon. So he made Mincha. And Yaakov, his second letter of the name is Ein. So that's Erev. He made Arvit. That's how we know that each one designed the bracha. So somebody shared with me a funny joke, that why did Yaakov prepare the prayer of Arvit? Because he had to put to sleep 12 kids at the same time. So he's like, "I'm just going to go and pray. You told him others, you put them to bed, I'll go and pray." So Yaakov Avinu found a loophole how to go to be exempt from putting the kids to sleep. So suddenly he was like, "Okay, I'll go and pray." And he told his wife, "You put the kids to bed." So, excuse me? Exactly. So that's the joke. That's a sad joke. That putting the kids to bed is the worst part of the day. That's it. You already had it. You're tired. The capacity of what you can handle has already reached to the limit. And then suddenly, "Oh, I'm sorry. It's my rib. I got to get to the minion." So Yaakov Avinu ran to the minion, and up until today, he made it hard for all the ladies. So Yaakov Avinu started by, first of all, apologizing, which already is a very big lesson, that sometimes you have to apologize for something you even didn't do, just to calm things down. And hold on, we're going to be done soon, then you can ask questions. But in a lot of the times that we argue, it's because nobody wants to give in. And that's usually the cause of not working out the argument, because nobody wants to give in. And sometimes even if you are 5,000% right, sometimes you need to know to give in and to say, you're right, fine, here, take the credit right now. It doesn't matter. In arguments, it doesn't matter who's right. There's a saying in Hebrew that it says, "Al tiyeh tzodek, tiyeh chacham." Don't be right, be smart. My father used to tell me that always when I was a kid. And he told me, you want something valuable to take with you for the rest of the life in arguments? Don't be right, be smart. Because even if you're 100% right, it's not going to help you. What's going to help you is being smart. By manipulating or presenting the situation in a way that you don't continue the argument. And by being right, you're holding your ground and you're not willing to let go. And people are holding this point of I'm right, and they're not willing to let go from this I'm right for 50 years because I'm right. Yeah, you're right, but you're so stupid. Because nothing will help you by being right. In most cases, it's just more smart to just say, okay, you're right, or fine. So Yaakov was very smart in that respect, and he gave Esav, he tells him, fine, I'm sorry, you're right, I was suffering. He presented the situation in such a way that he totally gave away his respect, his honor. That's why Yaakov bowed to Esav 7 times, to show him, I so to say, surrender to you. Yaakov was great. Everybody, all the Mefarshim saying, why are you bowing to this wicked man? So Yaakov says, because that's what got me now, the argument calmed down. And he was actually, Yaakov had to come to correct it. Because we know that Yaakov and Esav both got reincarnated in Mordechai and Haman. Mordechai is a reincarnation of Yaakov, and Haman is a reincarnation of Esav. And that's why Mordechai refused to bow. First of all, when they asked Mordechai, why are you not bowing? Oh, you know, your forefather Yaakov bowed to Esav. So he says, I'm very sorry, I'm from Shevet Binyamin. Binyamin was in the stomach, he wasn't there, he didn't bow. So I'm from Shevet Binyamin, I'm not bowing also. But more than that, Yaakov had to correct this bowing. So he came back as Mordechai, and this time he was like, I'm not bowing to this Rasha, to this wicked man. So he didn't bow to Mordechai. But by presenting the act of the bowing, Yaakov basically, he manipulated the situation by making Esav think, you are right, I was wrong, here, I'm bowing to you, I'm lowering myself. So Yaakov did anything that he could based on nature to appease Esav. But really, the miracle that occurred was only a sayata deshmaya, help from above. It was the miracle of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when all the Mefarshim were talking about that, it was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that says Yaakov didn't do anything. It was a miracle of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It was a nes. And there's a story that there was once a gzera with the Romans, and they didn't know how to deal with it, so they decided they're going to send Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And when everybody says, sending Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the Romans, they want to kill him. They hate him. He had to hide in a cave for 13 years because he went against the Malchut, against the king. Why are you sending Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Because it says, because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai melumad benisim. His miracles are done for him. And the story in the Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon went to Romi, and he was such a powerful individual, we don't have to explain who was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He sent an angel to the daughter of the king, and she had a dibuk, and she became cuckoo, and she kept running around screaming, I need to meet Rabbi Shimon, I need to meet Rabbi Shimon. And they were like, okay, who's this Rabbi Shimon, how do we find him? And then they said, oh look, what a coincidence, Rabbi Shimon is in Romi, he's in town, let's get him. And then she saw him and she relaxed. So the king came and said, oh, thank you for curing my daughter, how can I repay you? So Rabbi Shimon says, annul the decree. And that's how the decree was annulled, and the Jews were all saved. But the reason why they sent Rabbi Shimon is because he was known to have very strong, powerful of miracles. And there's another story that it's talking about at the time of Antinous, that it's also in the Gemara, and it's talking about how one time he saw like a Jew walking in the street and nothing's happening, and he was in a great wonder, how come this Jew is walking in the street and nobody's killing him? And he says, what, this sheep is walking safe amongst 70 nations? And when he spoke, there was the Rebbe of that time was Rabbi Yoshua, and he was like the advisor, and he's asking him, how come this Jew is, look at this Jew, how safe it is. And he compared the Jew to a sheep. So Rabbi Yeshua says, it's not the sheep, it's the Ro'eh, it's the shepherd. So the point is that even in everything that we see, we think that maybe we did something, it's basically the shepherd that's taking care of things. So in this particular case, why was the miracle? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu intervened. The Kadosh Baruch Hu came down and made a miracle. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai explains that what really happened the night before. The night before the meeting, four groups of angels went down to Esav. It says Kitot. Kita is like a big group of angels went down. They went down to Esav and they came to start a fight with him. Now Esav maybe was a hero against humans. But when angels came to him, he didn't know how to fight with them. So they wanted to kill him. So he was screaming, don't kill me, don't kill me, I'm Yaakov's brother. So they said, oh, if you're Yaakov's brother, then we let it go. We're not going to do anything to you. Then the next group came down and they wanted to kill him. And he got scared and the same thing. He screamed, no, 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 don't kill me, don't kill me, I'm Yaakov's brother. So he said, they said the same thing. Oh, you're Yaakov's brother? Fine, we'll let you go. And every time the same thing, four times. So the next day, when he saw Yaakov, he was already all hyped up. He's like, no, 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 it's okay, okay. I don't want to mess with him anymore. But this was only done by the miracle. But the lesson we need to take from that first I have to do my part. I have to do what's called Bederech HaTeva. I have to create the vessel that the miracle can get dressed in something in nature. I have to pray to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. I have to, first of all, prepare for war. Now, I don't have to prepare for physical war. Rather, I have to prepare the ground. Then I have to prepare the matanot, the presents. And more than that, I have to pray. Once I did my part, and the main preparation that I need to do is to lower my ego, to lower my self-esteem, to make myself more humble, and say, you know what, if another person is angry with me, maybe they're right. They also have feelings, they also have an opinion. In an argument, has to be two people. You can't argue with yourself. I mean, some people do argue with themselves, but the reality is that in an argument, it has to be two parties. And maybe he's wrong, maybe he's right, maybe I'm wrong. That's what I need to take from my father Yaakov, is in an argument, first of all, could very much be that I'm the one who's wrong. And it's a greater person to look inside myself and say, you know, maybe I did something wrong. Maybe I need to apologize. Maybe I need to look into myself and say, you know what, I wasn't right. Maybe I said it the wrong way. Even if I think that I'm right, maybe I presented it the wrong way. Maybe I should have approached it a different way. Maybe that person is sensitive and I could have talked to him in a different way. So 50% of the time, and I'm saying 50% not because that's the ratio, because it's easiest to say half of the times, I'm wrong. In some individuals, 90% they're wrong, and they just don't want to lower their ego and admit that you are right. Because I don't want to work on myself. I don't want to lower myself. I don't want to see myself in a way that I see myself that I'm not so perfect. Because in my way, my angle, how I look at myself, my ego tells me, no, you're perfect. You, everything is good with you. Everybody around you are wrong. Everybody owes you. And you are 100%. So in every argument, I'm like, oh, I'm right, I'm right, she's wrong, he's wrong. What I need to take from that in most of the arguments could be that I'm wrong and I have to lower myself. But more than that, I have to wait for the miracle to happen. And we see it that our sages, they added a line in our prayers in Shmona Esrei that we say it at the end, in the last Yehi L'Ratzon, one thing that we say, you say, Yehi L'Ratzon Fanecha Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Vateinu, that my enemies, that Kol HaChoshvim Alai Ra'a Mehera Kalkel Machshavtam, that everyone, that person that thinks bad at me, make them not think bad at me anymore. If you look at the last paragraph of the of Shmona Esrei, this is something that I pray for the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this part of Shmona Esrei has the most important parts of the prayer. Just go through it one by one, and you'll see what we're asking in this last Yehi Ratzon. And one of the things that we're asking is Me'ra Hafer Kol HaChoshvim Alai Ra'a, anyone who thinks bad about me, Me'ra Hafer Atzatam. Hafer Atzatam is annul what they're thinking. How we say at the end of the prayer, we also add another line at the end of the prayer. We add Al Tira Mipachat Pitom U'Mishuat Hashem Ki Tavo. Why? Because constantly somebody thinking bad about me, I'm praying to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Me'ra Hafer Atzatam V'Kalkel Machshavtam. Destroy their thoughts. Why am I saying that? Because I did my part. Basically, my entire avodah in prayer is to humble myself. First I say korbanot, so I can start understanding. Korbanot is sacrifices. That I start understanding that I'm nobody, that I'm nothing. A korban comes from the motion lehakriv, to sacrifice something. So that the motion of that is that I'm nobody. I have to sacrifice from my own selfness, my own ego. Then I start reading Pesukei Dezimra, all the praising of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Then Kriyat Shema, the ultimate bitul. And then Shmona Esrei is when I bow down, when I humble myself in front of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So my entire order in prayer is to humble myself. Then I can pray for the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now make the ones who are angry at me and upset at me, make them change their mind. So what I need to take from that is, first of all, that I'm not perfect. That in any argument that I'm in, any disagreement, then there's another side. And that other side also have an opinion, they have feelings, and could very much be that they are right. And it's my avodah, it's my work in every disagreement to see where was I that was wrong. And if I would look in every disagreement or argument where I'm wrong, A, that I'm refining myself and I'm elevating myself to the level that I should reach. But more than that, I'm allowing the miracle to be dressed in nature, and then Hashem makes the miracle that the argument and the fight and the anger comes down. So Bezrat Hashem, this power of this week, what I need to concentrate on, any disagreement that I have, or any fight that I have, or anything, it can be something permanent, husband and wife that are constantly arguing, a mother and a child that's constantly arguing, a business partner. This is an auspicious week to work on myself, to say, okay, where I'm wrong in this argument, where can I fix myself? It's very easy to say, no, in this argument she's 100% wrong. No, if my wife is angry at me, it means I did something. She's not angry because of the weather or because she has hormones. I did something. Maybe 50% of it is not, has nothing to do with me. But if I'm in the argument, I also have something to contribute. So it's a very auspicious time to really lower my ego and see where I'm wrong. But more than that is to really understand the power of prayer, how I need Hashem's miracles in everything that I do, and everything has to be dressed in nature. So Bezrat Hashem, this week should be a week of miracles. In a week that I can actually start resolving and solving problems, because we all have at some point that some type of a disagreement or argument with somebody, whether it's in a very low scale or in a very big scale. And the most important thing to take from that and to learn from our forefathers, it says, "Maaseh avot siman lebanim," the action of the fathers is something for me to take. Is Yaakov Avinu, who was such a great tzaddik, was able to humble himself in front of one of the weakest people in history. He was able to humble himself and say, you are right. Only to calm things down. Because Yaakov, if Yaakov would have to go to war, Yaakov prepared. And Yaakov had the chance of winning. But Yaakov says, why get into war? Why suffer casualties? In war, people get hurt. Why to even get to that point? So better humbling myself and to making everything according to the path of the Torah, which is Darkei Noam, everything is in peace. Bezrat Hashem, if we will know how to reach out to any person that has some type of an argument with me and apply the Torah of Darkei Darkei Noam, that everything is peaceful and peace, then we'll merit to see the ultimate peace between our nation, between our nation to other nations, and that will only happen, Bezat Hashem, very soon when Mashiach comes. Should marry to see it very soon in our days.